From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made with, quote, the fact of a seed, end quote. I'll read now the fact of a seed, as written by our friends at Fruition Seeds. Quote, it's nothing new and no less miraculous. All fall and across the long winter, we've watched squirrels move acorns, munching as they go, new oaks soon sprouting from this dance and happenstance, millions of years unfurling. Since their earliest existence on planet Earth 400 million years ago, seed-bearing plants have gifted the world with lush, delectable diversity, as fluid and free as water and air, to move in the world, becoming and abundant everywhere they land. As robins sing and snows melt, let us remember that we, too, are harbingers of spring, both in vision as well as the material world, end quote. The passage continues on, encouraging us to not leave planting just to the professionals. Friends, we are the seeds, the passage tells us. Do you feel like a seed? Well, as we inch our way toward the warmer weather and I guess what we would consider the growing season, it's time to think about your priorities for your space, the garden, the field, the yard, the flower pot, whatever space you have to plant. And our guest today will want to ensure that you do that with joy. There is no one more joyful than the co-founder of Fruition Seeds, and that's Petra Page Mann, who is back with us now. Welcome back to the program. Great to have you, Petra.
Oh, Evan, it's such a joy. Such a joy. Happy spring, dare I say.
It is. It's officially, it's not just meteorological spring. It's a beautiful, beautiful day. Petra, it's great to have you back here. Thanks for being with us. In studio with us is Melissa Carlson, the organizer, an organizer for You Dig Community Garden. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Tell us what You Dig is. It's you, the letter, you, again, D-I-G, You Dig.
It's UU because it's on First Unitarian land. And the pun is You Dig because you, the members, dig. We have 20 beds on the street side of the Unitarian Church at Winton Road, and we all share it and as we garden through the year.
Well, it's nice to have you here. Thank you for being here. Marcy Moeller is with us as well, horticulture team leader at Cornell Cooperative Extension of Monroe County. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Liz Henderson, an organic farmer, a member of Soil Health Policy Committee of the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York, co-founder of the Rochester Urban Agriculture Working Group, and a member of the Rochester Food Policy Council. Liz, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
So we have an important event coming up. The third annual Rochester Seed Swap is on Saturday, this Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. It's happening at the Edgerton Rec Center. It is free. Petra, what do you want people to know about this event?
That all are welcome, and everyone is encouraged, especially if you don't have any seeds to bring to the swap. The beauty of the swap is that there's so much abundance for us all, and often people feel like they can't bring seeds home if they don't necessarily have seeds to give. And so I just want everyone to know that these seeds are abundant for us all, and even if you don't, especially if you don't have any seeds to contribute to the seed swap, that you bringing seeds home is how we begin to shift these cycles.
Well, the event on Saturday, 2 to 4, and for people who have never done this, Petra, that's what we talk about every year, and might feel a little intimidated or feel like, you know, I'm not very good at this. Everything I grow dies. Or maybe I'm just talking about me. But for people listening who are a little intimidated, what would you want them to know?
We are all just climbing the mountain together. There's no one way to be alive. There's no one way to garden. And being in community is the gift of our species. So not feeling alone and showing up. There will be pots and there will be potting mix to sow seeds too, and lots of folks to ask questions of. So honestly, this seed swap is not just a place to give and receive abundance and knowledge and passion of the whole seeds, but also in growing ourselves as well as our garden.
I'm a little worried that Petra's going to blow away in the wind there. I'm hearing I'm hearing some sort of breeze or crackling there. your seeds should not blow away in the breeze here. The event, again, on Saturday from 2 to 4. And I would ask Melissa Carlson, who's with us in studio, you know, what you would say to sort of the first-timers. I want to encourage people this hour, if they've got questions about growing, about seeds, if they've never done this, to call the program. You can do that toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program. It's toll-free. It's connections@WXXI.org. What would you tell people who are sort of first-timers in this, Melissa, who feel intimidated?
You can't go wrong.
I've gone wrong. That's,
you put seeds in the pot, and if it doesn't grow, you try again, or you buy some that's already started. And if it does grow, then keep on nurturing it. You're doing a little bit right. Every year is a good year for something. We don't know at the end, until the end, what it's going to be. But that's been what's been going on with my community garden, which is 14 or 15 years old this year.
And it's going well.
Yeah.
That's great.
For something every year.
Let me also say that the event that we're talking about, the third annual Rochester Seed Swap on Saturday, is the first of a series. There's a Naples Seed Swap happening on Monday the 1st, coming up from 6 to 7 p.m. That's at the Naples, New York Library. We'll tell you this multiple times this hour in case you want to mark your calendars. So the Naples Seed Swap is on Monday, 6 to 7 p.m. down at the Naples Library. That's free. The Geneva Seed Swap, 2 weeks after that, it's Monday, April 15th. From 3:30 to 7 p.m. in Geneva. I got to get a location for that. That one is free as well. Trumansburg is hosting Wednesday, May 1st for a seed swap event that is also free. So this Saturday in Rochester, the Naples event is on Monday. The Geneva event is 2 weeks after that, Monday, the 15th of April. The Trumansburg event is on Wednesday, May 1st. Don't bring seeds that are more than 3 years old, and don't bring, I guess, plant transplants, Petra? Is that, we're avoiding that?
Yeah, you know, there's transplants as far as seedlings, the people who started inside, those are totally valid. Thinking about transplant divisions of perennials in our gardens, jumping worms are increasingly phenomena in our community, and so we're really trying to reduce the spread of jumping worms. So as far as seedlings go, like tomatoes, peppers, lettuce, by all means bring them to share, but when it comes to perennials and other things that you're digging out of the ground, that's where we're hitting pause.
All right. And in a minute, we'll talk to Marcy and Liz about this as well. Melissa, if people want to get involved with any of, whether it's these upcoming events or, you know, with the UDIG, et cetera, and kind of draw on your wisdom or others, what would you encourage them to do?
If you see somebody gardening, talk to them. I get a lot of members for our group when I'm working in the garden and kids walk by and I say, here, have you ever eaten a fresh bean? And so they...
And what do most kids say?
Oh, they just look at mom like, wow, can I really have this? Yeah. Ooh.
I love that. You know, that's... I think it's a good example of how a lot of us aren't as in touch with growing as maybe we could be. And, you know, I think it's important to point out, Melissa, that this is not just for people who have a huge amount of their own space or land. That's
what's best about it.
Growing can be pretty egalitarian, right?
It can be. That's why I have this community garden, because my yard, I have a regular city lot and a lot of big maple trees, so it's all shady. I can't grow any food. But the community garden is flat and open, and I just said, yeah, I don't need more food, really, but I need to have this space. So it's lovely the church shares it with us.
What questions do you get most often?
I don't know how to do this. How can I start? I just show up. And our garden, our community garden runs a little bit different than most. We work as a group together. And I just take in the information from everybody and what do you want to grow? What was your favorite crop last year? Most community gardens are, you get your own 4x4 plot and go figure it out yourself and maybe talk to your neighbors. So with our group, we work every Saturday morning. You show up, you take home food that Saturday, and we talk to each other as we go. And what do you think? How deep should I plant these seeds? How long will it take them to sprout? Stuff like that. We just talk to each other.
How long does it usually take them to sprout, Melissa?
Depends on the seed.
Oh, boy.
Radishes are fast, as Petra has taught me. You put radishes in with your carrots because the radishes, which I planted some under some plastic 2 weeks ago, are already up, and the carrots are going to take a few more weeks. I haven't planted those yet, but they different ones go different speeds.
Let me go to Petra and then Marcy. Petra, do you want to add to that?
I'm just crying a little bit over here. Thanks for paying attention to the seeds, Melissa. And I'm glad I could be an ambassador.
Marcy Muller, what would you say to people who really do feel like, well, I've never grown from seed, or I'm not much of a grower at all, and you know, getting started seems a little daunting. What would you tell them, Marcy?
Well, I do. I've got to put in a shameless plug for a Master Gardener program. We have a program called Seed to Supper. It's for first-time gardeners. There's a curriculum that is delivered that covers, you know, all the basics of, you know, starting seed, growing the plants, you know, maintaining the plants, and so on. If you live in the city and you're interested in that, call Cooperative Extension, and we can get you hooked up with the Seed to Supper training. But, you know, like everybody else says, too, if you just want to do trial and error, just don't put too much pressure on yourself the first time. And, you know, see it as a great experiment and keep notes, you know, always keep notes about what you did so that you can refer back and you know what you did that worked and what you did that didn't work. And not everything will grow in everybody's garden. So, you know, some things are going to, you know, perform really well for you. We have a little farm up in at our office near the zoo, and you know, we do great with things like beans and tomatoes and lettuces and that sort of thing, but we've had a really hard time with the brassicas, mostly because of groundhogs. But you know, so you just have to figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you, and then don't grow the things that don't grow in your garden. Grow the things that grow well, but always try something new.
All right. Well, Marcy, I'm going to be the first caller to ask a question because I've got questions. Before we go to the audience, I'm the audience right now because here are the mistakes that I make. And let me ask all of our guests. I'll start with Marcy. I'm fortunate enough to have a house in the city. It is very shady. And, you know, I have long since given up on the monoculture. I'm fine with very little grass. The moss is our friend in the yard. We've got lots of ground bees that come in April. It's part of the deal. And it's there's a lot going on, but it is hard for me to grow anything that requires consistent sun. You get these bursts in the afternoon, but these big old trees are, you know, they're quite blocking of the sun. So
right.
Where would you have me kind of start thinking about what can work, Marcy?
Well, are you thinking about ornamentals or are you thinking about food?
I want it all, Marcy.
Well, I think you got to try the greens, you know, lettuces and that sort of thing. It depends. I mean, most of the foods that we eat are going to need some sun. But those are your best bets there. And maybe even, you know, some of the root vegetables, might do okay. As far as ornamentals, you know, of course, you do you have deer wandering through your yard? Because, you know, hostas always are go-to.
Yes, but
for shade.
Sometimes
shade.
Fox more than deer. The hostas typically last. We've got hostas, and we like them. They last until late summer, fall, and then the deer usually find them as a snack, I think.
Right. And then there's some, you know, there are some shrubs that can tolerate some. There's another good perennial is lungwort, pulmonaria. Sort of along the same lines as a hosta, but a different kind of leaf, a fuzzy leaf and modeling and that sort of thing. That will grow in almost all shade.
Lungwort? Did you say lungwort?
Yes, L-U-N-G-W-O-R-T.
And it's lungwort. Pulmonaria?
P-U-L-M-O-N-A-R-I.
Fantastic. Yep. I'm looking at it right now. It looks great. Okay.
Yeah, That's a good one.
It's a terrible name.
And then you can try things like oak leaf hydrangea. That's a large shrub that flowers like in July, and that can take some shade. Virginia sweetspire is another one that can take some shade. So there's a few things. Mahonia is sort of a semi-evergreen, has a leaf like a holly. Some people like it, some people don't. But that'll grow in some shade. How's that?
That's a great start. Let's see what Liz Henderson wants to add to that list. Anything, Liz?
Okay.
I would add berry bushes. Black raspberries are an edge shrub, so they grow nicely in the shade. And once you get black raspberries going, black caps, they will spread, and you will have as many as you can pick.
Okay, great. And Melissa Carlson, anything you want to add here?
I agree with what Marcy said, that leaf vegetables tend to not take as much sun as fruiting or rooting things.
Hmm. Okay. Petra, anything to add there?
I might try growing a few things in containers. A few things being like salad mix, really quick, small baby greens. So you'll know in 2 weeks whether that spot has enough light or another spot has a little better light. If the leaves are straight up, they're not seeking light. If they're bending toward maybe a window if they're inside, or where there's a gap in the canopy in your yard, the plants will tell you where there's enough light and where there isn't. And if you're just growing in a container, and if you're just growing really quick baby green salad mix or like baby cilantro is another great choice too, then you'll learn so much. And I just want to piggyback on berries. Last year I heard Robin Wall Kimmerer speak, and in the Q&A she shared that berries are a gateway to loving the world, and it's really stuck with me ever since. So yes, whether it's in our backyards or in community gardens, there are a few other plants that have boundaries like berries and also have abundance like berries.
I'm not sure you can love the world more, Petra, but if berries is what it takes.
I'm so here for them. I'm so here for it. So.
Let me get an email from Michael who says, I'd like to express my gratitude for the mentorship that Petra and Elizabeth have given to so many of us in local communities. I also want to share the joy of seed saving. It's easier than people may think, and it's wonderful because you can view your spring garden as beginning at the end of the previous summer and early fall when you harvest seed for next year. That's from Michael. Petra, let me start with you. What would you say to that?
Oh my goodness. This is why we do what we do, and just tears in my eyes again. Thank you, Michael. And yeah, there are certainly some seeds that are easier to save than others. But yeah, there are so many that are so easy and fruition seeds. When people ask if I have children, I say yes, and great, 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 great grandchildren. And I've been saving seeds since I was a tiny person, so for decades now. And so I think of them as growing me more than I grow them. And every single one of our seeds that we share on our website has growing information as well as detailed seed saving information. And we actually have a number of free online courses, including one that is called Saving Our Seeds, Saving Ourselves, that is dedicated, of course, to a lot of the technicalities of how to save lots of different seeds in our climate. There's plenty of other philosophy in there too, you might imagine. But there's so many tools. It's one of my great, great goals in life that 150 years ago, seed companies didn't exist. And if we do our work well, seed companies won't need to exist in 150 years. And so how do we decommodify
wow.
ourselves?
Yeah.
How do we decommodify our seeds? And these seed swaps are honestly at the center of how I see seeds and community being shared in really different non-commercial ways, returning our relationships to the center rather than any kind of profit potential.
Anything you want to add there, Melissa?
I had some great seed saving experiments when my kale went to seed and I forgot to deal with it. And so next year I had a ton of kale sprouts. And also anybody who's ever had a backyard compost pile and you have weird things coming out of it, that's seed saving.
Say that part again.
If you have a compost pile, like you chuck your old tomatoes out, and then I spread my compost around my yard, and I have tomato seedlings and kale seedlings growing in my yard because they came from the compost pile.
Right.
So there's unintentional seed saving.
Marcy, we got to let you go in a minute here. So what would you want to add here?
Seed saving's great, and we will be at the seed swap. We have seed from our farm from last year, and so for people who don't have seed, you know, come see us, and we'd be happy to share what we didn't use last year. But seed saving, I love it because it connects you, makes the garden year round. There's that connection from one year to the next that you're, you know, using that same material.
Marcy, always appreciate your expertise. Thank you for making the time to squeeze us in on the road today.
Thanks so much. Always love to be on.
Great to have Marcy Muller, horticulture team leader at Cornell Cooperative Extension of Monroe County. Liz Henderson, anything you want to add to this portion of the program?
Well, I guess I would like to say that if people are new to gardening, you should really connect with the Urban Agriculture Working Group. There'll be a bunch of us at the seed swap. There are community gardens all around the city on land that belongs to the city that gives out free permits for gardens. And the best way to learn is by just helping someone who's a little ahead of you. And that's how gardening and growing food has been passed down among human beings for millennia. Mm. And in addition to the seed swap, there's going to be an April 27th gardening conference. It'd be our ninth gardening conference where there are workshops on many of the things that will help you get started or get more advanced. I'll be doing a workshop on soil health, because having healthy soil is the best way to avoid attracting pests and growing really good food. And then there's going to be a plant swap and a plant giveaway that the Recreation Department will be doing at the end of May. So there are many opportunities to get involved, and we welcome everybody.
Well, and I mentioned some of these events. The seed swap's not just this weekend. The third annual Rochester Seed Swap is Saturday from 2 to 4 at the Edgerton Rec Center on Backus Street in Rochester. It's free. They'd love to see you there. But then if you can't go on Saturday in Rochester, you got the Naples Seed Swap on Monday, next Monday from 6 to 7 at the Naples Library. The Geneva Seed Swap, 2 weeks after that, Monday, April 15th. The Trumansburg Seed Swap is Wednesday, May 1st. Petra, are you behind all of these? Is this like your grand plan?
How did you know?
It's all you.
I mean, it's the seeds, really.
They are growing and spreading. So lots of chances, no matter where you are. If you're listening on WXXI, if you're listening on WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, this region is covered by these seed swap events, and they're really lovely, great chance to meet people and get some knowledge. And a common question that we're hearing is when to start planting, and I'm going to frame this in a couple different ways. And Petra, let me start with you. There's, I think, the general question of how to know when to plant what you are planting, and then this particular year. I mean, we're in spring now. We just came off a winter that wasn't. We were not only 60 to 70 inches of snow behind schedule, but we had the warmest winter ever in recorded time going back 150 years in Rochester. I would go for a jog in January or February in short sleeves. And, you know, in the moment, it felt good, but it felt strange and it kind of felt wrong. It kind of felt like something was off. And that is part of what we have to navigate in, you know, sort of in the way the world is changing. I'm not accepting it. I'm just observing how strange it feels to feel warmth and to feel good about that, but to feel like it's not the right time for this. And then I thought about, well, how does that affect a growing season? What if we get early bud break in a lot in different crops that have bud break? And what if we see, you know, the sap start flowing earlier? And what does that mean for everything that typically happens in April, May, June? What if that all moves up? And does that change what an average grower has to think about? So there's a lot there, but I want to give you all some space. And Petra, how do you think about those questions?
So many feelings. And here's where I'd love to start. There's so much grief and there's so much joy always. in everything. And I've been feeling a lot of similar feelings this winter, Evan. And here's where I've been reeling myself back in, where adaptation is constant, change is constant, and the bell curve of evolution, we are witnessing the growing edges of right now. As the world is changing, if I let myself think about it more, I would actually be really concerned if the plants and the birds, if all the beings of planet Earth weren't also changing alongside, because that changing is adaptation. And so that adaptation always looks like a bell curve. So not all of the first crocus are blooming. Not all of the first maples are sending up their sugars early. It's just that the first ones. And so, right, those, they won't all survive, because no matter where we are in what epoch of history, none of us will survive. I digress. So we're witnessing the active adaptation of resilience in action, of how these plants, all of these beings around us, are adapting to climate change. And we get to be some of those beings. And so that looks like absolutely grieving. I cry almost every day, to be honest with you. There's a lot to grieve in the world. And also, where are these growing edges in ourselves and in the world? And our gardens are perfect laboratories for helping us explore both grief and hope, and just continuing to practice what showing up looks like, and continuing to plant seeds and trusting, honestly, that, I mean, these seeds have experienced all of the 6 prior mass extinction events that planet Earth has had, depending on your worldview. And so they have embedded in them all of that genetic brilliance of how to survive absolute calamity. And so this, as much as it hasn't happened before, what we're experiencing isn't new. And so I have honestly a lot more faith in these seeds than I do in myself, and certainly in our species, to be entirely frank. And so let's get back to some very practical tips.
Yeah.
We have planting calendars on our website. There are so many things that you can actually, we have a longer spring season. It doesn't necessarily mean that the final frost is going to be earlier. So we're still planting our tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, any of our tender annuals that are cold and frost sensitive. We're not planting them any earlier. We're not taking any chances. There's a lot of that 150-year record of temperature, even though it really varies. Some years it can be 3 weeks ahead of another year, but on average, it's Memorial Day for us. And you'll see seasons like last year where so many people, grief and gardens, lost so many plants from that very early frost. So it's climate change, not just as the total climate warms. And so I think honoring that, we don't want to be pushing up ahead anything that any tomato planting. That being said, we can plant broccoli and arugula and spinach and the peas, any of the cold season crops, we have twice the season, essentially, than we did when I was a child in our gardens here in Western New York, for better and for worse, for the grief and the joy. So we can get in and be sowing seeds right now with a lot of confidence that they're going to do just fine. So that's, you know, any of the cool season lettuces, peas, arugula, mescaline mix, radishes, beets. So a lot of those early season crops we can plant with so much confidence.
I knew I asked the right person. Petra is talking about last year's spring freeze. I think that was in May. And for our friends in industries like the Finger Lakes wine industry, it was devastating, because when you've got bud break that has happened and you've got really vulnerable plants, and then you get a deep freeze, and a deep one. We're not talking 30 degrees for an hour. We're talking down to 24 for 4 to 6 hours. It is frightening, and they lost a lot. And that was a really, really hard year for them. So that's part of what Petra's talking about with the joy and the grief. You get a longer growing season, but you've got more risk of loss, and that loss can be really, really tough. So here's hoping that this year is more placid, a little more consistent and smooth, although it's hard to expect that in the age of climate change and the vicissitudes of weather. Let me ask Liz Henderson to weigh in as well. Can you kind of give me a sense for how you've been feeling over this winter that wasn't, and how that might kind of then blend into your view of how growers have to think about this?
Well, something I've thought a lot about this winter has been the zoning regulations for the city of Rochester and how important it is that in the zoning and in the other ways that the city encourages gardening, that it makes it as easy as possible for gardeners to be really flexible. So the zoning needs to allow gardeners to use low tunnels and row covers, high tunnels, small greenhouses to protect their plants. That way, we'll be able to deal with these radical changes in the weather. With a row cover, if you see that a frost is coming on suddenly, you can cover all of your small annuals up double or triple for a few hours or a couple days and keep them from freezing. So simple tools that we should have on hand and that we all need to learn how to use would be really helpful with city regulations that allow us to do that.
Boy, Liz, you know, Petra's thinking about the resilience of seeds over the centuries and the human place in the world, and you're thinking about city zoning regulations after this winter that wasn't. I love the yin and the yang. I mean, we're covering it all this hour, just as we should. And let me ask Melissa Carlson, the organizer of You Dig Community Garden, how you have felt this bizarre winter and how it might affect your thinking about growing this year.
I'm sort of in the Petra camp that it's along things. At least the hours of sunlight aren't changing radically. That's climate change isn't changing that. So I typically, it depends more on my workload. Do I have a free few hours on the warm week in March? And sometimes there is one, sometimes there isn't. And we have little greenhouses that I made that are 4 feet tall, and that's where I plant things that need a little bit extra warmth that I'm just not sure about. So I planted those 2 weeks ago, and they got covered with snow all last week, and they're happy and sprouting now. That gives them a little boost. And yeah, I've planted cucumbers and watched them die. So it's always an experiment.
With no guarantees. And mm-hmm. Can it be discouraging, Melissa?
I don't think of discouraging. There's always something that does well. And I'm very thankful for all the people that grow cucumbers. So the year that I tried growing mine from seed and they got lovely and then they got trashed by frost, I was able to go to the public market next weekend and buy a whole set, a six-pack, and plant them out, get going again.
I love the optimism. It really is needed. Sarah writes to say, can you ask your guests how deeply I should be planting? We can talk about when to plant, but I never know, especially with seeds, how deep they need to be. So, Petra Page, man, I'll start with you, the co-founder of Fruition Seeds. Sarah wants to know, how deep do we put the seeds?
A classic quandary. Here is, I don't generally like gold or rules, but here's a pretty golden rule, or a mindful encouragement. Seeds love to be planted twice their depth. So honestly, one of the common mistakes that people make is planting seeds way too deep. Imagine how small a tomato seed is. And so they're really barely covered at all. There are some plants that are exceptions, but that's by and large, plant seeds twice their depth. And fun facts, on the back of each of our packets, they're mini encyclopedias. And so you'll find all of that information. And you will also find that information just on our website. So you don't even have to purchase a single seed packet from us to have access to all of that info too.
But if you screw this up, what's the consequence, Petra?
It really varies. It's a choose your own adventure. I cannot tell you. But a lot of people tend to plant seeds more deeply rather than more shallow. And so then the seeds have enough energy to sprout, but not enough to get through 6 inches of soil,
just that, you know, quarter inch of soil. And so often seeds will sprout, but then not be able to have the energy to actually get up above the soil.
Okay. Liz, anything to add there?
Well, what I wanted to add is that there are a lot of plants that we're used to growing in our gardens, like collard greens and kale, that really do very well through these warm winters. So I visited the Magnolia Street garden on Magnolia Street that I've been involved with for a couple of years. And right now, there are collard greens that we could pick and eat, kale that overwintered. There's some arugula that all lived through the winter and we can be eating right now.
Okay. Yeah. You're nodding right here, Melissa.
Yeah. When I pulled up all my old plants last year, I left the kale stumps and now I've got little 6-inch tall things with 3-inch wide kale sprouts in there. It's just so delicious.
How do you know how to do that? I mean, it's just, it
seems. You watch other people.
It seems something close to magic to me. But that's, I hope that answers Sarah's question. Michael says, Evan, there's a lot of talk about farms and yards on this program. What about the rest of us who don't have farms and yards? Michael, I promise you, we're trying to make sure that this conversation is centered on not just one thing here, that this is for everybody, no matter where you live and what your circumstances are. This is about trying to make sure everyone has access. If you can get to one of these seed swaps, those are free events. That's a chance to swap. That's a chance to learn. That's a chance to get seeds, gain knowledge, etc. And then I will ask all of our guests. I'll start in studio with Melissa Carlson. So again, Michael is concerned that, you know, we got to get beyond just farms and yards. And what else can people who don't have that space do to grow? So Melissa?
Community gardens. Like Liz said, they're all over the place. And the city, I think, has a list of them. And some you have to show up at. Mine, we work Saturday mornings. Others, it's just you get your own plot and you go do things. So everybody has different rules. But that's the point of a community garden. Like you and I don't have sunlight in our yard. So I went and found a place that has sunlight.
And how do, apart from knowing where the community garden is, how do you find the person who might be nominally in charge of running it and going through that process of making sure that you can get involved with that?
I would guess the Urban Ag Working Group. Liz can confirm that. I'm in charge of ours, and I tell people if you're interested, email me. I can probably leave my email with you.
Sure, we'll have it in show notes, yeah.
Then I know there's somebody, I've got a plot down at Brighton Community Gardens, too, next to Buckland Park, and there's somebody in charge there that through the town of Brighton there, you can get a lot. And if they are full, then it's only Brighton residents. If not, then it's anybody who can go. And they have water, and that's a different experience than my UDIG garden. There, people talk to each other as they're working and digging. I have a plot near the entrance, and people come over, what are you growing, and how did yours turn out? Did the groundhogs swipe out all your brassicas? Yep. So every community garden just has a wonderful different flavor.
Liz Henderson, you want to add to that?
Well, one way of finding out is Taproot is keeping a list of the gardens and who to contact in those gardens. And I believe they've also gotten funding to hire somebody whose job it will be to visit as many gardens as possible and support people in how to grow things. At the Magnolia Street Garden, there's a when the founder lives right across the street. So if you're hanging out in the garden, she might come over and talk to you. And a lot of the gardens are like that. They have people who are regularly involved. So that's the best way of doing it. It's social, and it's a way of getting to know people as well as getting to grow things, especially things that you can eat.
Mm-hmm. And Petra Page, man, seeds are for the people, all the people, right?
I couldn't have said it better. Yeah, the only thing that I would add to Melissa and Liz's invitations are, you know, microgreens are really easy to grow inside no matter where you live. And so 8 days later, you're eating baby broccoli sprouts. Divine. We have blogs and a free online course about how to set yourself up for success on our website around that. And also as an invitation, we have, you know, our farm here in Naples. We're an hour south of Rochester. And this year we'll be having community orchard and garden days, separate, one each month, because we don't think of our farm as our farm, but our farm as all of our farm. And we're really wanting to intentionally be inviting people to be in relationship with the land and with these plants. And especially because, you know, the orchard, there are very few people that can really have a full-size, even small-scale orchard in their homes, but they would love to have access to such a thing. And so we have over 100 trees of, you know, northern hardy peaches and plums and all kinds of hazelnuts and even northern hardy pecans, and certainly apples and pears and currants and yastaberries and other rambling loveliness. And we love to be on that land. We love being with these plants. We love being with people on this land. And so stay tuned to our website, and under the events, you'll see those monthly invitations to be part of that, those community orchard and gardening days.
Michael, thank you for the note. We can come back to your emails in a moment. And listeners, a little... go ahead.
Evan, yep. I have an idea for you.
Yeah.
Evan, I've seen people who grow things in wheelbarrows so that they can wheel the barrel around to where their son. So if you have a wheelbarrow, you can grow some tomatoes in it and just move the wheelbarrow a couple times a day.
I mean, so Liz, I've seen wheelbarrow growing before, and I just thought it was a cool decorative thing that added to the yard. I didn't think about its mobility.
That's right.
That's very clever. I mean, growers are the ultimate problem solvers. It's really great. Excellent idea. Thank you. And that just changed exactly how I think about some of my neighbors and how clever they are, because I've seen that, and maybe I need a well-decorated wheelbarrow that's going to move and find the sun. That's a really good idea. Listeners, there's a little space left if you want to call the program toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. And again, the email address is connections@WXXI.org. We are on the brink of the seed swap season. The first event is on Saturday in Rochester. The third annual Rochester seed swap will happen from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Edgerton Rec Center on Bacchus Street. It is free. You can bring seeds to share if you like. You don't need to bring seeds to share. They would just love to see you, to talk to you, and you can gain some knowledge and perhaps some seeds as well. That's on Saturday. And then on Monday in Naples, it's at the Naples Library from 6 to 7, a Naples seed swap. The Geneva seed swap is 2 weeks later on Monday, April 15th. The Trumansburg seed swap is Wednesday, May 1st. So swapping all over the place. These seeds are going to see the whole region, and they're going to find you, and you can find them at various locations based on what your schedule may include. Petra, you mentioned currants, C-U-R-R-A-N-T-S. And every time I've ever seen currants, I thought, well, there's no way that's a Western New York plant. But please disabuse me of my bad ideas.
I definitely wouldn't encourage you to consider them a bad idea. I would just encourage you to remember that plants are the most miraculous beings on the planet. And that I'm really grateful I ate breakfast today. And we are so thankful and fortunate if we did. And currants are here for you. They are so easy to grow. And admittedly, there's a lot of other plants that I could wow you with. Like, what? Peanuts? It's kind of a miracle. But currants grow in Newfoundland.
Whoa.
So easily. My dear friend Morgan, who grew up here in Naples, who now lives outside of Denali, is growing currants. So this just in, they're here for the next ice age, whenever that twist comes. So also come on down. But yes,
wow.
You are
you don't need a whole lot of light for currants too. You'll get more fruit with the more light, but they could definitely subsist in the understory of your yard as well.
You also said something that I want to circle back to make sure I understand, because one of the questions that new growers tend to have is, how long until I can maybe get something from them? And if I plant, will I see a result, a crop? And you said something about 8 days later with microgreens. I mean, that seemed, did I hear that wrong?
You did not, in fact.
Can you elaborate on that?
They are the closest thing to instant gratification that you will find in growing, in gardening. And so imagine you're just eating sprouts. You're not really eating, they don't have even true leaves. So they're literally just sprouts. And especially if you plant them in a tray on a heat mat, and especially if it's a brassica and arugula, broccoli, tatsoi, some delicious plant in the seed in the brassica family, they generally sprout within 24 hours anyway, if it's above like 50 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you put them on a heat mat, they're just sprouting as soon as you plant them. And so they're an inch and a half tall at 8 days old. So you're eating these delicious sprouts. It's instant. That is the closest. Well, Melissa, Liz, I'm curious. Anything else that's more instant gratification?
What do you think, Melissa?
The only thing I'm thinking is I sprouted some garbanzo beans this morning and I just ate them. So
yes,
that was 2 days.
Absolutely. Sprouts are the thing. I'm definitely corrected.
Amazing. Liz, you want to add to that?
I don't. I can't think of anything that grows faster. A great thing about those sprouts, too, is they will tell you if the soil that you're using is not healthy, if it's compost that's not mature, they won't sprout. So you need to grow them in decent soil, and they'll tell you about it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So I hope we're answering many of your questions. And before I start to give our guests some time to organize some final thoughts, let me just ask Petra one more time to tell listeners, I mean, the impetus of this conversation are these upcoming seed swaps. If people haven't been to them, what should they expect, Petra?
Oh, wow. Expect a lot of people that are as excited about plants as you are. That might not be a common phenomena in your life. And in case that seems like a new phenomena, welcome. You are not alone. So imagine 100 plus people in a room that are so excited to be talking spring and sharing seeds and to be just surrounded by that kind of hope and vitality and sharing abundance. And then there's all these tables. And Chloe Smith of 490 Farmers is such an incredible human, and she's an amazing artist. And a few years ago, she created these beautiful watercolor images of all of these different plant types. And so you'll find her beautiful watercolor art on sticks in terracotta pots on different tables. So you know, oh yeah, there's the tomatoes, there's the squash, there's the cucumbers, there's the flowers and greens. And so if you have brought seeds to share, you'll find you have the cucumber, you'll find the cucumber table and you'll place them on the table. And if you're really interested in what are the peppers that I can sow this year, go to the pepper table and you'll find 250. If there's a lot of, last year at the Rochester Seed Swap, there were often well over 300 packets of seed on a given table, especially for the most popular crop types like peppers and tomatoes. So you have an incredible selection of seeds to choose from. So if you're looking for a particular type, go find, just look across the crowds, across the tables, look for Chloe's beautiful watercolor art. And it's a bit of an Easter egg hunt, to be honest.
It sounds like an absolutely great time. You don't have to bring anything, right, Petra? I mean, for people who don't have things to bring themselves, that's okay.
That is right. You're bringing yourself.
There'll also be tables from a lot of community organizations. So if you want to sign up to be on the mailing list of the Urban Agriculture Working Group, you can sign up at the Seed Swap or sign up for the courses that the Cooperative Extension gives or for the garlic and other things that are given out by taproot. So it's not just the seeds, but it's important connections that you can make that will help you get the things you need to garden in Rochester.
That's great. Thank you, Liz. And yeah, Petra, as Petra has told you, there's no seed police. They're not standing at the door saying, so what are you bringing? They're happy that you'll be there, period. Especially if this is new to you. It's a chance to grow that community of people that Petra was just talking about. Patrick writes to say, on sprouts, my mom was doing that in the 80s and 90s. They work on peanut butter and jelly. Sprouts on peanut butter and jelly, Patrick says. All right.
Add crunch.
That would, yeah, that would add some texture. Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. About 30 seconds apiece. Final thoughts, Melissa. What do you want to leave with listeners as they think about this growing season?
Just do it. Come find a community garden, find a place, find a pot, and put some seeds in and see what happens. You'll learn something, and maybe you'll eat something.
And even in the face of failure, you always learn from failure, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Melissa's just about the most optimistic grower I've met. She said every season is good for something. And the exciting thing is finding out what it was good for. Well, that is a great way to look at it. Liz Henderson, what would you want to leave with listeners?
I think Melissa was trained by being a member of the community-supported agriculture at my farm. And she learned that her share some years didn't contain certain things because they just didn't grow that year, but there would be more of something else. And what I'd like to share with everybody is that we can really make Rochester a wonderful place for all of us to grow food and achieve together the kind of food sovereignty and control of our food supply that we need as we're going through this really difficult period for climate change. It's going to get worse for the next decade before hopefully things will get better because we'll make the changes that have to be made. But building healthy soil and working together on growing food is one of the ways we're going to get through this.
Thank you, Liz. And Petra, I hate to edit you. You got to keep it a little bit tight. Final thoughts from you.
I just would love to lift up Liz and Melissa and you, Evan, and just how grateful I am to be in conversations like this and lifting up all of the organizers of this seed swap. This is the third annual, and we are not stopping anytime soon, and it's just such a privilege to be growing in all of these ways. And thank you to the seeds for teaching us how to connect.
Absolutely. I just got this beautiful email and a poem from Beth about seeds that I don't even have time to read. But Beth, I want you to know, I'm going to share it with our guests. It's really, really lovely. And they are so sincere in their love of growing and helping the community. Petra Pageman, Fruition Seeds, thank you as always, Petra.
Thank you, Evan.
Much love to you and to Liz Henderson. Thank you, Liz. Great talking to you.
Thank you. And happy growing this season, everybody.
Absolutely. And Melissa Carlson, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
From the whole team at Connections, thank you for listening. We are back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.